This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Denise Crosby. I play Tasha Yar on Star Trek The Next Generation, and you're listening to Trek FM.
T.O. Greyhawk.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey. I'm your host, Kevin Scarf. Amy is away again, and so join with me today are Joe Keegan, Rhea Papagiorgio, and Pierre Larocco. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
What is this? Is this like new hosts hosting already?
We're taking over. Ha ha.
What? Delete host. Delete. What's the delete host button?
Oh.
You deleted Amy. No.
Can you imagine the outcry? We'd be shot at dawn.
Yes.
Oh. But you know, everybody needs a break now and then, so it's good that we're here, so that you can have a rest every so often, Joe.
But you know what, Kevin? You'll come to realize that Amy's like the matriarch of Earl Grey, and her vacations or holidays, if you will, get ever more frequent. It's like exponential growth. Soon she'll be just like on this infinitely long holiday and we'll never see her again.
Maybe that was my plan all along.
I will join her on this infinite holiday.
It feels like an infinite holiday at the moment.
It does.
That sounds fabulous.
Before we get into our main topic today, we do have a little bit of feedback from our last couple of episodes. Rhea, you and Amy did an episode about death and aging. I see we've got a bit of feedback about that.
Yes, episode 324. If you haven't listened to it yet, please do. It's not as scary as you might think from the title. Christian Alonso commented, "What? All my favorites on one pod?" And I know by favorites you don't mean death and aging. By favorites you mean Amy, Joe, and Rhea. Ooh. Yes, Christian, and get used to it.
And not in that order, though. It's in the order Rhea, Joe, Amy.
I thought it was in the order Joe, and then Amy and Rhea.
9 billion, all Joe, yeah.
Yes.
No, put our guest first, let Rhea go first, and then Amy's not here, so she can go last. But we were talking about this earlier, about the death and aging episode in these COVID-19 times. And there wasn't a lot of feedback about it, apart from Christian saying that we were all his favourites. So, yeah, it was less difficult to talk about than I thought. It was just more thought-provoking. And it became a lot about what our legacy, having lived this life, was going to be. It did cause me to have a bit of an emotional and kind of psychological crisis after editing it, but... it was a positive experience, so I'm glad I did it, and it was great having Rhea on for her audition.
My top secret squirrel audition.
Exactly.
I really enjoyed that episode, guys. I thought it was fantastic, and I loved how personal you got, and I really felt like I learned a lot about you. So it was a come to know Joe and Rhea moment for me.
Ah.
Thank you, Kevin. Can I ask why you didn't leave any feedback then for us to read out?
Just time. It's timing. Time, and time gets away from me. I'm so busy, Joe.
Aren't we all at the moment? I know. Going out for dinner, going to the theatre, yeah. Going to see sports events. I know. Just life is just crazy at the moment with the social calendar as it is.
You'd be surprised.
Yes, I've got a garden to plant today. I've got rooms to paint, laundry to do.
Spring is finally here. I can get outside again.
Mm-hmm. Our spring has sprung, so to speak.
I have TNG episodes to watch.
There were many week.
There were many.
Have you not seen them all, Pierre?
Oh, not in a long time, and for a reason.
No, Rhea.
Well, before we get to that, we should go on with the rest of the feedback.
We should. I know we digress.
Yes.
Too much.
So let's talk about the last episode that that I listened to was episode 325, Jack Crusher Joe. You've got some feedback on that one.
Do this feedback's from Kimberly Lawler, whose idea it was to for us to talk about Jack Crusher. Kimberly very nicely gave us this huge amount of feedback, just continuing the discussion. So I've cut it down ever so slightly to maybe kind of a millionth of what it initially was. So Kimberly says, Amy, Nelson and Joe Keegan, thank you so very much for taking on this topic. Even if you weren't sure you wanted to at first, I think Jack is so interesting because for a character we know so little about how he had a huge lasting influence on three main characters we do know a lot about. Picard says he was honest, trusting, strong. He clearly had a good sense of humour and he cared about being a good father. For books, none of them are canon, but I think I like the version of the friendship with Picard, Jack and Beverly and Jack's death in the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard better than in Reunion. Q Squared did a fantastic job exploring Jack's character too, but that didn't focus on the past so much as the complicated present and all the different timelines. I love Q Squared. Thanks again for the nice episode. Smiley face, smiley face. Thank you, Kimberly. It was really interesting. I think I commented during the episode that given that we know so little about Jack Crusher, I had no idea what I wanted to say. We see him as a hologram, then as a dead body on a morgue slab, and then as in a hallucination or a vision or some drug-induced brain something. We literally don't see him as a real living character, so it was really difficult to come up with anything for him. But it was, I think we did it justice, I hope.
Yeah, that sounded great.
I think you did. Kevin Parlagreco has a comment. Before I read it, though, I have to say, Kevin, let us know what part of Italy your family hails from, because Parlagreco is Italiano for speaks Greek, so you very well might be from one of the Greek parts of Italy, just like Pierre and I both have ancestry from there, and we are related, so you might be family too. So, back to Kevin Parlagreco's comment. He says, yes, absolutely. He's a whole unexplored story, not only for Wesley, but Beverly and Picard as well. Yeah, there's a lot to tap into there with Jack Crusher.
There is. So interesting. I think we might find that Rhea is maybe related to half our listeners.
Very possible.
Like the mother, seed of all life.
The distant cousin of all life.
Interesting. That's cool. So Rhea, tell me, are we related in any way? Is Keegan Greek for related to Rhea?
It could be. We'll have to dig into your ancestry a little. I mean, you're handsome enough to be Greek, so there you go.
I think I'm too white to be Greek.
Well, you've been out of the sun for a while.
Thanks.
So John Kirkorian says, sure, but that obscenity of a mangled maroon uniform has to go. Rolling on floor laughing emoji.
Was his uniform really that bad?
I feel like it was just lazy, as with costuming. Like, how hard is it to get the turtleneck and put it on him?
I saw it as an evolutionary step between those movie uniforms and the first season Next Gen uniforms that didn't have any collars either. That's how I saw it.
How I saw it as well.
Yeah, it's not a bad costume, but I wouldn't want to be showing that much neck.
And kind of the nostalgia of the Monster Maroons. But I think that they would have been gone long before Jack Crusher came around.
I think so. What do military organizations normally do in terms of rotating uniforms? Is it like every year? Every 10 years? Does anybody know?
I have
no
idea.
It kind of depends. It's pretty often. And depending on, like with the U.S. Army, when the whole stuff in the Middle East started up again, they went from the jungle type camouflage to the desert type camouflage. And So it kind of depends on need, but with like the dress uniforms, they do get changed every now and then. Keep it fresh.
Who knew?
Like license plates, I guess.
Do you know what? I've been thinking about license plates recently. And the difference between, like, I think, US, maybe Canadian, I'm not sure, and the UK license plates. Our license plates are like you apply for your registration and you get the plates for the car, and you can sometimes pick what you want,
mm-hmm.
but there's a formula for them. So my new car, I don't, are you supposed to give your registration plate out? Does it mean they can hack your car? I don't know. Mine's is SK20ZNG, which makes me laugh because if I was German, I could say ZNG is like the next generation. And that's like the podcast
there you
I
go.
Post on. Yeah. So yeah, I didn't choose that. It just got given
right.
to me. And in the US, you see people with like Star Trek ones, like Resistance is Futile, abbreviated, but still looks like, or NCC1701.
In Ontario, we have personalized plates, and you can also get graphics on your plates too. And one of the choices that you can get for your car license plate in Ontario is actually a Star Trek The Next Generation communicator logo. You can have
wow.
it right on your license plate.
So if like you commit a crime and you're fleeing the scene and somebody sees you and the phone's a place and goes, they say, what's the registration? And the person has never seen Star Trek before and they go, okay, it looks like little oval with a weird triangle thing with another smaller triangle cut out.
The design isn't actually part of your registration number.
Okay.
But you can get, there's all kinds of different graphics you can get at various sports teams or colleges or universities. You can have that logo put on your, mine, I do geocaching, so I have a geocaching logo on my license plate. And so there's all kinds of various different logos you can have on your license plate. The other weird thing is they just changed the color of the license plates in Ontario, and they changed them to a color that don't show up on cameras when the sun goes down. So we
nice.
Have to scrap all of them and get all new ones again.
Wow.
Our tax dollars at work.
Yep, exactly.
Interestingly, all our front number plates are white and all our rear number plates are yellow.
Hmm.
Has to be that way.
Interesting.
And has to be both front and back.
I have the same.
Unlike when you go to Vegas, because that's where I've been recently, there's some cars with no number plates on them, and I'm like, oh, that's not right.
In the U.S., it varies by state. Some states
yeah.
don't require a front plate, but some states do. But yeah,
it's very strange.
Anyway, we've gotten way off topic here today, so let's go to our main topic. And today we're starting a new series on Earl Grey where we're going to try to find the good in episodes that have been poorly received or gotten bad reviews. And this episode will be focusing on season one. Now, Joe, you created this list for us. How did you come up with this list of episodes that we've got to take a look at?
Okay, so I randomly googled stuff, and there's a bunch of websites created by people with opinions about what is bad about Star Trek, so I went there initially for the list of 11. Almost half the season was rated as bad by some people, and then Amy suggested that we just use the IMDb ratings, and then that spurred me on to make a spreadsheet of all 179 TNG episodes or something. Are there 179? Yes, 179 from Encounter at Farpoint all the way through to All Good Things. And then with Excel, you can order things how you want.
Right.
Things that come out top five, according to IMDb, are Measure of a Man, Season 2, Episode 9, with a IMDb rating of 9.2.
Wow.
Yesterday's Enterprise, Season 3, Episode 15, again with a rating of 9.2. Then Best of Both Worlds, Part 2, Season 4, Episode 1, rating of 9.3. Then, in second place, Best of Both Worlds, Part 1, Season 3, Episode 26, obviously, with a rating of 9.4. And lastly, The Inner Light, Season 5, Episode 25, with a rating of 9.5, which is the highest rating that the Next Generation ever got, according to IMDb.
Cool.
But I think that must be out of 10.
I think so,
assume.
Yeah.
Wow, and All Good Things wasn't on that list. Crazy.
All Good Things was 5th and 6th. No, it was 6th and 7th. Yeah, because I gave the top 5.
Unfortunately, we're not looking at the top of the list. We're looking at the bottom of the list.
We are looking at the bottom of the list, yes.
Did you find that there was a higher proportion of season 1 episodes at the bottom of the list than other seasons?
Oh, that would take more data analysis. Oh, I haven't got to that stage yet.
You know, you're playing with the numbers there.
I have looking at...
Because you gave us a list of 11. That's a lot of episodes.
That list of 11 was, I think, just one website's opinion on what the worst episodes were. And then that person who created the list must have just thought, those are the worst episodes and the rest are relatively good, I suppose. I have colour-coded the episodes by season in my spreadsheet. And as I scroll to the worst, there is more season one at the beginning than there is at the end.
Interesting.
And that's the limits of my data analysis so far.
I don't think that's surprising to anyone. But we're not here to talk about what makes those episodes bad. We're here to talk about what makes those particular episodes actually good. So, Pierre, why don't you pick one of those episodes and let us know your thoughts on it and what you found that was good in one of these episodes. What episode did you want to talk about first?
So my thought of what the worst episode of season one is Coming of Age. It just makes no sense to me. Especially looking back at it in retrospect. So Wesley has already saved a ship twice at this point in season one, and he can't get into the academy. It makes no sense. I don't know what other words to put to it, except for it makes no sense.
Right.
I also find it hard to believe that that Admiral Quinn shows up with this investigator and they go on this fishing expedition to see if Picard's loyal. Like from all the things we see about the Federation and Star Trek world later on, this episode makes no sense to me.
Yeah, Joe and I talked about that episode quite a bit when we did our deep dive into Wesley Crusher there a few weeks ago. But we're looking to find things that are good about that episode. What kind of things did you see that you thought were fun or interesting or good? Anything?
Not really. No. I mean, it made no sense.
I agree with you on pretty much all of that, Pierre. The ridiculous test to get into Starfleet, that even when it first aired, you know, 30 years ago, I was just like, how can Wesley not get in? How are they only picking one? How do they keep stocking their ranks? You know, how does Barclay get in? Well, I wasn't thinking that at the time, you know, but how do, like, all these people get into the academy and Wesley can't and the Vulcan can't and the insecure woman, which I hate that trope, whatever. But I did find a couple of redeeming qualities in this, and one of them was, you know, for the first time we have a little mini arc with a setting up for the conspiracy episode with Remick and the Admiral, and I thought that was kind of cool planting that seed. And then there was some background not only on Worf, but Jack Crusher as well. So, you know, it's season 18 or episode 18 of a new series. So there was a little bit of a kind of early character development there that I thought was slightly redeeming.
Joe, do you have any thoughts on this episode?
Do you know, can I just preface everything I'm going to say with when I watched TNG originally, I was a teenager, and I just loved everything about it. So the episodes that are poorly rated, I've got these rose-tinted glasses on because I almost remember when I initially watched them. I don't, because it's like it was a million years ago and I've drank way too much wine since then. So my memory's maybe a bit foggy. But I remember all these episodes quite fondly, and I find it hard to find anything overtly bad about them. Coming of Age, I know we spoke about it recently. I quite like it. Interestingly, Coming of Age is ranked 7.2. So, around about the middle of where TNG is ranked. It's like an average grade for TNG. Other episodes have a rating of 7.2 are The Arsenal of Freedom, Galaxy's Child, Night Terrors, In Theory, Silicon Avatar, and Genesis. So, IMDb disagrees with Tia and Rhea.
It won't be the first time.
No, I can imagine what. It's so subjective. I like Wesley's test that he goes through. I like the fact there are different aspects to it. I don't get the fact that, or I try to understand the fact that they only get to put in one person from that particular planet.
Yes.
And I think there's a 150 member world, so there must be way more than 150 planets in the Federation. So if each one, like pro rata, gets to send like one person per 100,000 of the population, then that could make a new class of, say, a few hundred people, mm-hmm. possibly, or a few thousand people. I don't know. I agree with you. I think I like the way it sets up Remick to come back for Conspiracy, which I think is maybe, I think I say this every episode, it's maybe one of my favourite episodes. I think every episode's my favourite when I'm talking about it.
It's not an episode without some problems too, though. Conspiracy.
I very specifically remember watching it when it first aired and being pretty grossed out.
Yeah. I think its biggest issue is that it never gets paid off. That it, yeah.
Picard season 2, baby.
It could be. That would be great. I think one thing that I can say about Coming of Age is that it really shows Wesley in a good light. It shows his humanity, his intelligence, his empathy. I think it's probably one of the best Wesley-focused episodes of the series. So that's what I would say is good about that one. So, Joe, what episode did you want to talk about today?
I don't want to talk about any of them. This is a stupid topic. although, if we are focusing on finding the good in what was poorly received, then I like them all, so it's really difficult to choose. So I think, can I go there and choose the one that we all really don't want to talk about? Let's start a conversation about Code of
okay.
Honor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we need to talk about Code of Honor.
Yes. Something interestingly, Code of Honor is the third poorest rated episode of TNG, mm-hmm. with a rating of 5.2. It was only the fourth episode of the season, so they were still finding their feet, I suppose. I know there's a lot of controversy surrounding Code of Honor. As a teenager, obviously I was blissfully unaware of anything around about this. I know I've explained on Earl Grey before that growing up, I went to, because it was the west coast of Scotland, everybody I know was white. So to see, the only time I saw people of other ethnic minorities, black people or Indian people or Asian people, was on TV. So I suppose my teenage mind didn't see what was potentially controversial about it. So with that kind of lens on, I still kind of struggle to see what's potentially racist about it. Although I'll accept, because I don't get to decide what's racist and what's not, because I'm never really the subject. I'm kind of do you describe me as a white middle-class man? Middle-aged middle-class man, maybe?
I'd say a little more pink than white, but yeah.
I don't think you're middle-aged yet either. I think you have a lot more years ahead of you.
I think so. I think technically, what is it? The middle-agedness is between the years of 45 and 65. I think have they not recalculated middle-agedness, given the fact that people are getting older later? So I'm a couple of years away yet. But definitely white middle class man, although to say middle class, it doesn't really mean much to me. So yeah, I don't get to decide what is racist about an episode at all because, yeah, I'm not the subject of it. But like I was saying, I'm willing to accept that some people might find it racist because of the way black people or people of African American descent are portrayed within the episode in terms of being kind of a bit backward, I think, and tribal. The one thing I like about it, I just found it quite exciting at the time that Tasha had been kidnapped by these aliens, essentially, and Picard was being challenged to come and get her, and then she had a fight to the death. So yeah, I thought it was quite exciting. I think Rhea, in our conversations, did you not mention that it was, or was somebody that mentioned that there were, Tasha was playing a strong female character, which we never really get to see in TV at the time.
Yeah, and that's actually a theme through a lot of these season one episodes is, and they really beat you over the head with it, yet Tasha's a woman and she's chief of security, and there's so many episodes where it's just like, okay, dial it back a little bit, we get it. But I'm with you, Joe, and it could be the European mindset versus the North American mindset of, it never occurred to me that this episode was racist until I heard Star Trek people talking about it when I kind of fell into the online Star Trek community a couple years ago. And I was really shocked, but I mean, I get it. I get where people are coming from, but I still don't understand why is Code of Honor so shockingly racist when justice isn't, when Up the Long Ladder isn't. I mean, if you think one of them's racist, they're all racist. And what about the just blindingly absence of all Greeks in Star Trek? But let's not go there. But because who's to say that every planet you go to with humanoid bipeds, that there's a spectrum of, you know, skin color? I mean, who's to say you won't find a planet where everyone's dark-skinned? And so what? I mean, on the Justice planet, everyone's blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and runs a lot.
Swedish.
Yeah, everyone's Swedish. How are Swedes not offended by that? But so I still kind of struggle with the Code of Honor thing, and I really hope not to offend any listeners. I think it's just a mindset difference. Americans and possibly Canadians, I'll let Kevin chime in, are very, very, in my opinion, or I would say oversensitive to dark skin, and you cannot, you know, appear racist. And there's like I don't really have the words for it, but from the Greek mentality, we can say someone has dark skin, someone has light skin. It's not taboo to talk about someone's skin color, whereas here in the U.S., it's really weird. And if you have dark skin, well, you're an African-American. Well, what if you're not African? Haitian's not African. And that's another thing that cracks me up when people talk about, well, these you know, African-American, well, they're not American. They're on a different planet in Code of Honor. Where, I guess to put it in perspective, the kind of mindset I come from is, if you watch the NBA at all, which I don't, but Giannis Antetokounmpo, the guy that plays for the Milwaukee Bucks, he's Greek. He's Greek. That's all we care. He's Greek. But in the U.S., it's... I guess people are just so sensitive to skin color. So that, again, I see why especially Americans, North Americans think Code of Honor is racist. But redeeming qualities, I love the costumes. I think they're gorgeous. I think visually, if you take out the kind of emotional baggage of the potential racism there, I think visually it's a gorgeous episode to look at. Lutan, the one dude that kidnaps Tasha, I love his voice. Oh my gosh. And then one thing I found in a few of these episodes that I think is super relevant right now is the vaccine. When this episode came out, oh, it's a vaccine, it's a vaccine, no vaccine. You know, it didn't really mean as much, but right now, the importance of a vaccine means an awful lot more. I think Code of Honor is oddly relevant right now from that perspective. But again, I'll get off my soapbox. Again, I hope I did not offend anybody. That is not my intent. It's just I'm coming from a different mindset from everyone around me. So
I think it's a good story. I think the storyline is good. And I agree, there's some strong women, especially at the end when I'm blanking on her name, but the land and power.
Go ahead. She's called the first wife, isn't she? Or the first one is.
Yeah, yeah. The first where the money actually follows her, and that she really has all the control.
Yarina, her name was Yarina.
You know, so I mean, I was looking at what was going on in it and stuff like that. I think it's a good story, but really, what gets me is the how much the cast hates it, right? Like you get Jonathan Franks saying really negative things about the show, Brent Spiner saying really negative things, and I wonder what was going on kind of behind the scenes of filming that episode, where they really don't like it. You know, Will Wheaton has some things pretty negative to say about it. So that's really what gets me. But I think it's a decent storyline. I think costuming could have been maybe done a little different, or the setup a little different, where it didn't really, it wouldn't have been so familiar to something we know on Earth, or that we think we know about on Earth, that could have changed some things. But I think it was a good story.
And that's a good point, Pierre. There was a line in there that Picard says about, you know, and their culture is very similar to something on Earth. And so I think that kind of lends to why it's perceived as a racist episode. So again, you know, dial back the hate mail. I get it.
Well, I looked at this episode, and of all the ones I watched, this one felt the most like an original series episode of any of them. The look of it felt like a Captain Kirk episode, with the sort of plain orange backgrounds. Even when they were in some of the scenes on the Enterprise, it had that hexagonal pattern on the wall, like engineering did. Even the music sounded like original series music to me. So I think this is a case of the writers and the creators looking to what had come before and just continuing with it. And I think that just goes to prove that Next Gen hadn't found its feet yet, that they were still trying to be, they were trying to give people the Star Trek they remembered, even if it was with new characters. So I think you got to forgive it a little bit for that. The other thing was, there was one scene, it was with Crusher and Picard, and I think you always hear about, especially Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis talking about playing the subtext of the relationship that between Riker and Troy. And I think this was a case of Gates McFadden and Patrick Stewart playing the subtext between Picard and Crusher. It just felt like there was more going on behind the scenes or behind their eyes than their words were giving to them. It just felt like the actors were trying to create more there than what was on the page, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing that I noticed was this, because this is a very early episode, we said this was episode 4, I think this was the first big hand-to-hand combat scene on the show, and it's interesting that it was between two women. That, again, I think it was a case of the writer's room saying, this is current Star Trek, this is 1980s Star Trek, this is not 1960s Star Trek, and they were trying to... I don't think there was any intent of racism or sexism here. I think their intentions were good. I just think maybe execution came off a little wonky.
I agree with you, Kevin, on both those counts.
So...
interesting. Because obviously, I'm thinking about, we know about what the cast thought about it because they've got on board with the
perceived fan wisdom. Yeah.
The fandoms, yeah, the fans' thoughts about it. But I wonder if anybody's ever asked what the supporting cast thought of it. The people that were playing, like Lutan, I know he's passed away since, and Jesse Lawrence Ferguson. What did he think about it at the time? What did the other people... what was the planet called?
I don't recall.
Me neither. The Ligon 2. Is that true?
That sounds right.
Ligon 2. So, what did this black cast think about the portrayal of these characters? Either at the time, did they think it was really racist, or did... is it only after the fact? I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But
yeah,
it would be very interesting to see what they have to say about it. Yeah, it's one of those episodes where a lot of people talk so negatively about it, and then there's not a whole lot of info about it either out there. It's interesting.
I think they did change directors midway through. So, I mean, there was something going on behind the scenes, but
I also wonder what the reception of it was in 1987 compared to what the reception of it is in 2020, right? Like, I'm sure it was received differently then than it was now. Times change. So I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder when exactly it got its reputation as being a racist episode. Like, where in the timeline since 1987 that it got its reputation?
Yeah.
Wikipedia has a...
I'm just looking at that myself.
Has the Nielsen ratings... I'm just looking for the... How many people viewed it?
I'm on Wikipedia. It said it had a Nielsen rating of 9.5, reflecting the percentage of all households watching the episode during its initial during its time slot. So yeah, the Wikipedia entry on it is quite interesting, especially the section on reception.
And that Nielsen rate is that, I'm assuming that's a Nielsen rating because you said it was 9.5 is 9.5 US.
So that's
9.5 million US viewers.
No, it's of all the people watching television at that time, 9.5% of them were watching this episode.
Are you sure? Because the heading at the top of that table says millions.
I'm not sure. I'm just reading what it says on Wikipedia right here.
Interesting. So. I'm sure we've got lots of feedback for this.
I am sure we will.
So Julian Christopher, who played Hagen, is from Philadelphia. So maybe I'll just try to track him down and knock on his door and find out what he thought about it.
There you go.
That'd be awesome. We can get him on the show.
Don't get arrested. Actually, that'd be good. Yeah, find him, get him on as a guest.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Come and knock on our door.
All right, let's move on from Code of Honor.
Okay.
Rhea, you haven't gone yet, have you?
No, and I'm kind of between two.
Well, let's pick
I don't
one.
Know.
Just we can we probably get around to both of them, but so let's just talk about one.
Okay, so a lot of these episodes I hadn't watched in a long time for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went through and watched them all. And one that I was glad that I rewatched was Skin of Evil.
Mm.
It's one that. Like a lot of the first season episodes, they're just more stilted. Things are a little forced. You know, the characters are trying to find their way. And I never really liked Armus. And I don't know. It's an episode I never really liked. The special effects are kind of comic, especially nowadays. But there were watching it again this time, I took a lot out of it. There was a very strong pro-life message in that, you know, the Federation, all life is valuable, all life is should be protected, you know, every individual person is valued, and I think that that's something that they've carried throughout Star Trek, and I appreciate that. So another thing I appreciated too is that they killed a main character, and they stuck with it, and they killed her early on and suddenly, and they brought her back to the Enterprise, and you know, you thought for sure Beverly would be able to revive her, and she couldn't. And especially, you know, in 1987-88, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, they killed a character. So I appreciate that they did that. But the biggest thing I enjoyed about it watching it this last time was the study of a bully. I mean, Armus was a bully. That saying that hurt people hurt people. You know, Armus had been abandoned. He'd been deeply hurt, deeply wounded. He's all the negative stuff that these people wanted to shed. And as a result, he was just out to hurt people. It was really interesting to watch it from that perspective, especially now that I'm significantly older than I was when it first aired, significantly older, and have been around people like that and have been around bullies. In fact, I've got an employee right now who's like that. He just tries to make people miserable, and you got to feel for them, you know, what kind of what kind of a living hell it must be inside these people's minds. So yeah, I really appreciated watching Skin of Evil this time.
I thought of some great things when I watched Skin of Evil that I really enjoyed. You see a really strong Picard. Picard's like, my security chief was just killed. I'm going to go down to that planet and talk to him. And Picard essentially lies to him. Picard pulls out all the stops, isn't afraid, tells everyone else they can leave. He's like, he's a really strong Picard character there. And then also the funeral, you know, just to see how funerals are done at that point in history, or in the future, not in history. But to see how they're done, I thought that was really neat. The memorial service with the hologram, you know, with all of the crew around. It was just, I thought those two things were really, really positive for the episode and just really set up what we see later on in Star Trek.
Really good points. Yeah, I've never not liked this episode. I think, Rhea, you're right, because it changes something. It killed off a main character, and we're like, whoa, I liked her, even though she's not been in it for so long, but I liked that character. She was a strong female role model. She was chief of security, and they've just gone and killed her. This is big. This is what makes Star Trek really cool. Interestingly, Skin of Evil was rated 6.9 on IMDb, which is still relatively high. Other episodes that got 6.9 are The Battle, also from season 1, Home Soil, The Final Mission, and Firstborn from season 7.
One thing I liked about Skin of Evil was that the death came so quickly and suddenly. Not that I liked that people die quickly and suddenly, but it was a shock. It was a surprise. It wasn't built up, and it was, in the end, pointless. It really showed that being in Starfleet is a dangerous job. You never know when something like this could happen. And I thought that the way everyone reacted to that was really quite interesting. And talk about an episode that has a lasting impact on a series, you know, to eliminate a main cast member, that's a pretty big deal.
And what you said about, you know, the death coming so suddenly, when Pierre was talking about the memorial service, when I was rewatching it, it made me wonder, okay, so when did Tasha update her hologram? Like, how often do all of these Starfleet officers update their holograms? You know, I mean, realistically, like, how, when's the last time I updated my will? I need to get on that. I really need to get on that. But, and I thought about, you know, what about, like, you know, Lieutenant Jay didn't get invited to the memorial. Well, ouch.
That's a good point. You've got to imagine that if they're ever going on an away mission, when they didn't know they're going, they would, like when you see in war movies, before they go away to war, they'll write a wee note for somebody. So you've got to imagine there's something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the Enterprise just scans them every now and again to get an updated holographic profile so that when they do die, it's nice and up to date. And it just comes up with a message for their loved ones, possibly. Ishara Yar, when Data's talking to her in that episode when they meet Ishara, Tasha's sister, Data says that it was a pointless death. It was. As Armis basically just did it because he was bored, I think.
But I don't know how much I agree of that being a pointless death. Mm-hmm. Like, she was trying to save two crew members. One who was, like, critically injured. Right? So, I understand that Armis did it for no reason, but her reasons were pretty strong as to what she was trying to do.
Yeah, of course. That's what I meant.
And then by killing her, he realized he didn't get any satisfaction from it, and so that's really the reason he didn't kill anybody else.
I think the pointlessness comes from the fact that he didn't have to kill her. He was just being himself and mean.
All right, I want to talk about the episode The Last Outpost. Now, this is the episode that follows right after Code of Honor, where we are introduced to the Ferengi for the first time. It had only been 5 episodes, but they had talked about the Ferengi already, and they were being built up as this big new threat. They were going to be the Klingons of the next generation. And then we saw them. And sometimes anticipation is better than execution. And in this case, that was the fact. The Ferengi don't get redeemed for another 7 or 8 years until Deep Space Nine comes along. But having said that, there were some really great things in this episode. What I loved was how the crew worked as a team to figure out what was going on. They had a theory about why the ship was disabled, and they worked towards that theory, and then they discovered that they were wrong, and they had to turn around and change their theory. And I really appreciated how the team worked as a crew together on this episode. I thought that was really, really well done. There was some more Picard Crusher subtext in this one too, I thought. A little bedroom eyes as well. And the other thing I wanted to mention was that Geordi sort of came into his own on this episode. This was the first time we saw Geordi in engineering. He'd just been flying the ship up till this point. And at this time, the show didn't really have an engineer. And so when they needed somebody to do some engineering, they just sent Geordi off to do it. I think this was the start of them saying, hey, we got to give LeVar something more to do. And engineering is the place for him. So those are my thoughts about Last Outpost. Anybody have anything to add on that?
I like The Last Outpost, obviously, because I like them all. But The Last Outpost is interesting because what was really notable was that they had a holographic display in the observation lounge. Mm-hmm. They're all sitting around. I think Picard's standing, Data's at the desk, and there's this grey kind of circular disc on the desk, and Data does something to it, and it displays this rotating discovery-like kind of map of local space. And I was like, whoa. And it had never occurred to me that I'd seen it before, but now when like Discovery was full of holograms, let's face it. And I'm fine with that because we have, just now in 2020, we are at the beginnings of kind of having holographic technology. So where are we going to be in like nearly 400 years time? We're going to have proper holograms. So yeah, I like that little addition there with holographic technology. Also, like, I agree with you, Kevin, that we see them acting as a team, using that scientific method, mm-hmm. trying to figure out what's wrong with Enterprise and how to save themselves. There was a comment I read recently about the Ferengi that we see in TNG not being the Ferengi we see in Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
And the argument was made that we're seeing the military, we're seeing the Starfleet of the Ferengi in TNG, the guys that go around in the Ferengi Marauders. And on Deep Space Nine, we see just Ferengi civilians.
Mm-hmm.
So that might explain why they were, but they were a bit hokey, weren't they? They weren't the villains that they'd been portrayed to be. And I think I'm fine with that. I think I can forget about the fact that they were maybe, we were missold. They are just Ferengi.
I like that explanation, Joe, that they were the marauders, and because it's so easy to fall, and I'd fallen into the trap of the monoculture trap. Well, all Ferengi are like Quark. But no, you could very well have Ferengi marauders, even if one looks remarkably like Quark, played by Armin Shimmerman. But that helps me with this episode a lot, because this was one where my only comment was, ugh. I didn't write anything good down, although I think something good came to mind, but I was doing dishes, so I didn't write it down.
I like the Ferengi whip things, those whip weapons they have.
Mm-hmm.
Like the phaser. It's a phaser whip.
Energy whips.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're cool.
I like the design of their ship. I thought that was a really cool looking spaceship, too.
And I enjoyed the planet design, where with the fog cover as well as the crystals coming up. I thought the planet was well designed.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, it was a little preachy at the end with the whatever life form, I can't remember the species. But
the Takan Empire.
Yes, yes. But one thing I did like too was it was the beginning of, and it's interesting how little things get thrown out in early episodes and then get developed later on. I think in DS9 it was developed about how the Betazoids can't read Ferengis, But it was like Betazoids can't read anyone with the four-lobed brains like the Ferengis. And this whole thing developed out of, you know, Troy's kind of almost casual comments about not being able to, you know, to read their thoughts. You know, I don't know if they're blocking them or whatever. And that all came out of this.
I have just learned that Ferengi have four lobes in their brains. I didn't know that.
Have you ever looked at them, Joe?
Well, never dissected one. No.
Oh, they're tasty.
Oh! I like
Kelpian better, though.
Wow, Rhea went there. Rhea went there.
Always with the stomach, Rhea.
All right, so we've gone in depth on four episodes. Let's do a quick round of shout-outs to other episodes and sort of debate the perceived fan wisdom. So, Pierre, you got another one you want to talk about quickly?
Yes. I would like to talk about Angel One.
Ooh.
Let me start with this. A ship is 7 years overdue, and they're finally getting around to figuring out where it is.
Space is big.
So that was the first thing. I was like, this is crazy. But it was really interesting that they kind of, there was a world where kind of what happens on Earth kind of was flipped upside down. But it was also interesting to me of how funny / awkward the Enterprise folks felt about this. Like, I feel like they see so many different kinds of different things that they would have been a little more used to, or not as taken back by this kind of civilization that they found. And then just the finding the refugees, and then the refugees not wanting to leave was really interesting. Also, Riker having to make that decision on if they're all going or not. And if he's going to force them to go. And then once again, we have another vaccine thing where we're looking for a vaccine and a ship's in quarantine. And nowadays we all know what that's really like, you know, where we're, you know, before when we first watched this episode, I'm sure all of us were like, oh yeah, ship's in quarantine. But, you know, now knowing what that is really like was really something interesting to watch in this episode.
One of my notes I made on this episode is that Riker is a cosplayer. He likes to put on the native costumes of the planets he goes to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ewan, I have started making a Riker Angel One cosplay. Ewan wants it for SLB. So.
Nice. Yeah.
Yes! That was one of my notes as well, was Riker's left nipple.
Doesn't leave much to the imagination, but yeah, so...
Oh my gosh, yes.
Nice.
Yes. So. That was definitely a redeeming...
We really learned that Riker's kind of up for anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it carries on through the rest of the seven seasons. Like, Riker will do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or anyone. Yeah. I agree with you, Pierre, that it was very awkward how they handled this culture. And that kind of stuff, that's what kind of annoys me is, I don't know, when women are treated a certain way and... yeah, that part was awkward, but a line that I really liked early on, Geordi says, "Ever feel like you're not really wanted?" And I thought that was so funny, Geordi saying that about a planet of women.
Oh, because we learned so much about Geordi and his love life, or lack thereof. It's interesting.
Yeah. But also agree that one of my other notes was COVID, you know, how quickly that virus spread across the Enterprise. It's definitely relevant today.
Joe, got quick thoughts about another episode?
Yes. So, Pierre, you stole Angel One, but that's fine. Code of Honor was the worst rated episode of season one. Angel One was the second. The third worst rated is Justice, which had a rating of 6.0. Season one, episode eight. I like it.
I do too.
I don't have a problem with it. Similarly with Code of Honor, I don't see that race thing being an issue. I think I maybe as a teenager just liked looking at the people running around, like being all free and just happy, and they just looked like happy people running about, like living their best lives. I like the other storyline where there was this big invisible powerful space station protecting them, and we don't really learn anything else about it, rather than they see it as a god. And then the Enterprise leaves and leaves it alone. So, yeah, I enjoy the episode. I don't see what everybody's complaining about.
I took two things away. It sets the tone of Picard not always following the Prime Directive when it's not the right thing to do for his people, which I think was needed, especially at that point where Picard was so regimented. The other thing is just, it surprises me that they don't have, before you go down to a planet, they don't give you, like, a certain amount of things you need to know. Things you need to know about this planet. Things that you...
A visitor's guide. Yeah,
yeah, like, this will get you in trouble and not get in trouble.
But that got me to thinking about laws of places, and does ignorance of the law justify any crimes that you might commit? But think about how many laws that might be on the statute books, might be current laws, active laws, but to enforce them would be stupid. Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I don't know, chewing gum on a Tuesday in July. The silly old laws that were made up in like the 1700s and 1800s that made sense at the time, but never got removed from law. So you could be prosecuted for doing that thing, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it made me think about that kind of thing as well, and how laws, how different cultures' values affect their, you know, influence their laws, and how we need to be, you know, respectful of that. I mean, I would never go to Afghanistan or, you know, UAE or someplace where I'm not allowed to drive because I'm a woman, but those are their values and their laws there. And, you know, if I'm going to go there, I need to know that I'm not going to be able to drive. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I agree that perhaps like a visitor's guide would be handy. You know, don't crush the new flowers or you'll die. Another thing I like about Justice is this is a cosplay gold mine. Okay, how are we not doing this? Because I want a group to do this for the next convention that we actually get to go to.
You don't
want to
see me in a Justice costume. You don't. No, you do not.
Yes.
No.
It would be awesome. But another thing with Justice and one of the episodes we just talked about, there were like three or four episodes that I watched where they've got... It was very TOS-y. They have the godlike being. When the bow breaks, that was the other one. The godlike being, again, like straight out of TOS, the computer that's running things. I thought that was kind of interesting. There was a lot of that in season one, a lot of TOS themes where they're trying to kind of separate themselves from TOS, but they're still going to the same well. And I think that's why TNG got better and better as it went, as they kind of separated themselves from the tropes that had already been done over and over.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing where you've got some piece of technology or a race that is way more powerful than the crew of the Enterprise, but it turns out that it's not better because of that. There's some kind of problem that the Enterprise crew have to solve with their inferiority in place. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think my biggest issue is just beat you over the head with this plot, and it's not a subtle episode, let's just say that. Things I liked about it, Wesley was actually given a job to do. He wasn't just there. He was given an assignment. I liked that. I liked Worf. I thought Worf got to be the comic relief in this episode. I thought that was pretty fun, too. So, and I also liked that they got off the ship and out of the sound stages and were in a beautiful garden location. I thought that really was a good thing for the series at this point, too, to actually see something new and green.
It's a beautiful planet. I'd gladly visit.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a water treatment facility somewhere in the area.
It'd have to be something as lame as a water treatment facility.
Yeah.
Somewhere you know is going to stink and not be as idyllic as it was portrayed on TV.
Yeah, it probably does smell like raw sewage.
And there's an interesting question. If they played it differently and Wesley did die or was at least incarcerated for some time, how would we feel about Picard's decision to let that happen?
Mm.
And that would have coloured our vision of Picard in the future.
Yeah.
Like the whole discussion about how important the Prime Directive is, I don't think it's as important as it's portrayed to be. I think it's a very fluid rule. Pia, was it you that said in our chat when we were discussing this about why were they visiting this planet in the first place?
Yeah, because
they don't have warp drive.
Right, it seemed like, you know, you would know what's like in your orbit if you're anywhere near warp drive. So that kind of, right, what isn't that against the Prime Directive for them to be cohorting with them?
Well, that whole concept of how strictly do you enforce your laws, you know, is there ever any flexibility? That was kind of the thrust of Riker's speech at the end of the episode, that, you know, any civilization whose laws are blindly enforced with no regard for, I don't know, extenuating circumstances, I can't quote him exactly, you know, that's not truly a system of justice. And it was true that the godlike being let, you know, Wesley go, let the whole landing party go, but also true on the Starfleet side with their Prime Directive. They're like, okay, yeah, in this case, we're going to have to, you know, bend our Prime Directive in order to save one of our own. So I thought that was an interesting parallel.
Rhea, did you have another episode you wanted to mention quickly?
Yeah, quickly, When the Bow Breaks. And that's one that's always difficult to watch because it's children and Star Trek, and it's that's never a good mix. And it's so preachy, oh, the ozone layer, blah, blah, blah. But I did get a bunch of stuff out of it. I mean, it did have kind of that TOS theme of the computer, you know, running the show, and then the people don't even know how to repair the computer, and in the meantime, they're all getting radiation poisoning. But everyone needs calculus, even if Amy's not here, even, you know, if you're a little boy. But the whole, the false utopia, you know, that, again, a very TOS theme, that human need to struggle in order to thrive. And here the people on this planet had everything handed to them, and all they did was sit around and sculpt and make music. And, I mean, boring. So I liked kind of examining that.
Priya, you just didn't say making music was boring, did you?
No, I didn't.
For clarity.
No. But doing nothing else but sitting on your bum. Yeah,
okay, I get it, yeah. No, I like that, given my pursuits of recent days, building a raised bed in my garden, like sawing wood and screwing it together and then installing an external tap outside my kitchen to water the garden. These are things I've never done before, but it's like that struggle to figure out how to do something makes it completely worth it. I could have paid a plumber to come in and do it for me, but the scientist in me wants to figure out how to do things myself and go and do them, and that's, I'm kind of proud of that fact. So no, I get the struggle idea.
And then you can visit Rhea and do it for her.
I don't know. Let's see if this leaks overnight, then I will be doing it ever again.
Yeah.
I really like this episode. One of my favorite moments of it is when Picard talks in the observation lounge with the parents. You know, we don't see Picard deal or talk with many of the crew that's below the bridge staff, and it's neat to see. I think it's something that is really cool to see when it happens.
I think this is a great episode because it's the first one that focuses on the family aspect that was set up in Encounter at Farpoint. We've seen the odd kid on the Enterprise for some reason in Last Outpost. There were kids in the conference room that Riker had to shoo out. How they got there, I don't know. You'd think that'd be restricted. But in this one, the kids were important to the plot. And it's also another episode that gives Wesley a chance to shine. And I'm all for that as a character that I always felt got sort of short-shifted or put in the role of saving the day. And he didn't do either of those things in here in this episode, but he was important. So that's what I like about When the Bow Breaks.
Interestingly, when I pulled the initial list of 11 episodes, there was a bit of an explanation about why they were included in the list, and there was something about when the bow breaks, and it kind of coloured my vision about the episode. There's the old man and the wee girl, and she gets placed with him, and there was a mention about him just about being a creepy old guy wanting to live with a wee girl. And I don't know if that was necessarily true, but it's, you know, it's implanted that thought in my brain. I'm going, is there something else that I didn't see here? I don't think there was. I think this person that made the list is just a bit strange. But yeah, it's worth watching again just to see what you might think of that.
Well, I've got the last one I want to mention is Too Short a Season. That's the episode with the Admiral who takes the anti-aging drug. So this sort of almost ties in with your death and aging episode from a couple of weeks ago here. I hated this episode so much. Oh my God, it was just... The actor who was playing the Admiral was so over the top. But we're looking for good things in it. I thought this had one of the best action scenes that we'd seen up to this point. There was a phaser fight in the tunnels underneath the city. I thought that was pretty cool. We don't get a ton of running, jumping action scenes on Next Generation, and this was a good one. This was the first time in a long time that I noticed that all 8 of the main characters were on screen at the same time in the same scene. He asked the doctor to stay on the bridge with them, and you got to see there was one shot that had all 8 of your leads. Everybody who's in the main credits except Wesley was in the shot at the same time, and I thought that was a nice little touch. And again, I also thought there was a little more Picard Crusher subtext in this episode as well. But on the whole, it was just... I don't like it. I don't like it. Don't make me watch it again.
I am with you there, Kevin. It's painful. I think it's painful to watch. The old age makeup is so bad. So bad. But, having to rewatch it again, I think you can really pull a lot of deep themes out of it. It kind of hollered back to A Private Little War from TOS, you know, and the consequences of arming both sides of a conflict, and I mean, 40 years of civil war on the planet as a result. If you can get past some of the difficult stuff, I think there's some good content you can pull out of it.
It's never occurred to me that his acting was really over the top, but then when I think about the episode again, I'm thinking, it was, and now I don't like it. So, thanks, guys.
Woohoo!
Yeah, but I've always thought the makeup was ridiculous. I think the only time they've ever, like any movie or TV franchise that has ever done aging makeup good is Captain America at the end of Endgame, where Steve Rogers comes back as a wee old man.
Spoiler alert.
He's never seen Endgame?
Surely the whatever statute of limitations has passed. It's not a spoiler. It was out like 2 years ago. Come on. Just go and watch it, get yourself sorted. So apparently when Chris Evans' mum saw it, that scene, she was in tears because he looked so much like her dad, his grandfather, in real life. So yeah, they did get the aging. I think that level of makeup technology has improved so much that they're getting it right, rather than just... giving everybody like liver spots everywhere and a ton of wrinkles and grey hair.
And they were on an 80s TV budget when this episode was made, not a 2010, 2019 blockbuster movie budget. So.
De-aging, AI, CGI stuff.
He looks a lot like Admiral McCoy when they age him. Like very much
probably
so.
Probably same makeup. Yeah. Probably just washed the latex a bit.
Now, having said how bad I thought his acting was, I thought the woman who played his wife, I thought she was lovely. And she obviously had to know that the thing she was playing opposite was ridiculous, but I thought she handled it with grace, and I thought she was lovely. I really like that actress.
Agree.
Me three. Yeah, but she's playing, she knows who she's playing. That she's playing this wee old wife to an admiral woman. And I think she plays that well. Whereas the admiral's playing what he thinks the idea of a Starfleet admiral to him is that is suddenly getting younger, and I don't think anybody knows what that character is in order to play it right, given that you're only in one episode. So
well, I think that's some good thoughts about some episodes that are not ranked so highly, and I hope we've burst some perceived fan wisdom about them. Does anybody have any final thoughts about these few episodes we've discussed today?
Do you know what? I'm going to stand by what I say like all the time. I like all of them. There's a couple of episodes which annoy me generally about TNG. But I'll still watch them because they still bring me enjoyment. And I really like that old-fashioned episodic TV where if you miss 20 episodes in a row, you can just jump in wherever and it'll tell you a story that's worth discussing. So,
yeah, I agree. It's not as bad as people say. I think it's still good. They still tell good stories, even when execution wasn't that great. The stories were solid. It's just good.
Yeah, I'm glad I rewatched them. I hadn't in so long, and it was kind of cool to see, you know, everyone how they looked back then, first season, so young, and being able to pull stuff out of the episodes that I had never seen before, and the kind of the three or four that had kind of the COVID ties. I thought that was kind of interesting to watch those now. So, yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for making me watch these.
Yeah, I think we've got to keep in mind, too, that these episodes are a product of their time. Mm-hmm. 1987 was longer ago than I like to care to think about. So if you keep that in mind, keep an open mind, I think you can find good in pretty much any episode of Star Trek. So, well, it's been so much fun talking about the good in low-rated Season 1 episodes today, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
I guess what I'm seeing is that we're taking some of these later Borg ideas and kind of retconning them back into the best of both worlds. It's stuff that's not necessarily
that
there.
That is exactly what's happening, because I remember mm-hmm. Picard saying, like in First Contact, I can hear their voices.
Hear them.
You know,
right,
but that's way further than where we are. So, oh my goodness, what our mind does. Crazy.
Literary Treks.
And suddenly now there aren't dozens of movies in the Kelvin universe. So it's not such a critical matter for original novels to be set in that universe to come out. When I was writing The Unsettling Stars, which was not the original title, but that's what we're going to call it because that's what it is, I was very much aware of the two films that JJ had done, and I purposely wrote a book to do something that would not, in any way that I could think of, conflict with anything in the first two films.
Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
The corona epidemic is shocking. I mean, it's the, you know, we're having some of the most extreme measures being taken in, you know, living memory. I mean, you know, since the Second World War in this country, in many respects, the kind of things people are being asked to do, the level of involvement of the government in people's ordinary lives, totally unprecedented, certainly in, you know, our lifetimes, and frankly in the lifetimes of most people who are alive, you know, in this world at the moment. So there is that kind of sense that just when you think you're done with history, something happens and sort of reminds you that everything's not maybe as stable as it seems.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
I don't want them to look like original series Klingons or like Next Generation Klingons or even like Enterprise Klingons. I don't want that. I want them to look just modern. Yeah, you don't need to try to match an aesthetic from 20 to 50 years ago. You really just don't. Don't do that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways that you can do that. The best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. choose to send to a show, and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Joe, where can people contact you when you're not running about in gardens in short white skirts?
Have you got a CCTV access to my back garden, Kevin? This is very weird. So when I'm not doing that, you can get me on the Babel Conference as normal. You can listen to me on Earl Grey, where I'm a host. You can tweet me on the Twitter at joeyjoe77uk, or you can email me joepodcasts@gmail.com. And I will just add on to that that nobody's emailed me in quite a while, so please drop me an email. I check every 5 minutes.
I emailed you and you never responded
back.
That's
lies.
Like 3 months ago.
I'm going to check my email right now.
Please.
I'm very good at emailing. Not good at any other type of social media, but I got the email down. Right. Mm-hmm. What? Did you probably typed my email address wrong.
Probably.
Rhea, where can people contact you when you're not trying to murder people for the trampling on your garden?
Well... I'll be in the backyard replanting the garden, which is what I'll be doing this afternoon. Or you can find me on the Babel Conference or on Earl Grey, where I am kind of a semi-co-host. I'm not on any other social media because it's too complicated for my pack-led brain. But you can come over and visit me, and I'll cook for you, and we can dig dirt together. So, Pierre, where can people contact you when you're not watching Coming of Age?
People can contact me on the Babel Conference, where I'm there a lot of the time, and also my Twitter at PLAROCCO21. And Kevin, where can people contact you when you're not selling your Angel One cosplay costume?
Oh, you need to see those. But you can find me on the Babel Conference as well. I am on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter, you can find me at True North Nerds, which is a podcast I do with some friends about general geekiness in Central Ontario. And I'm also on a Star Trek fan audio drama called Endless Vigilance, and I think you should check it out. We have 2 episodes released so far, and I think it's really good.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's Papa Alpha Tango Romeo Echo Oscar Nancy.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tabruzio, Jim McMahon, Justin Osier, and Joe Keegan. Thank you for supporting Trek FM. And especially Earl Grey.
So, join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Captain, I am not aware of Regulation 6.57.
Great joy and joyous joyousness.
Energize.
Die, filthy humans!